In their study, Little Women and the Feminist Imagination, Janice Aubergine and Beverly Clark tell us that in 1986, the Ladies' Home Journal declared Louisa May Alcott one of the 25 most important women in U.S. history, one of only three authors listed. A year later, Little Women was one of the six works of classic American literature on which the journal based a series of recipes, serving up not just Tom Sawyer's catfish and Captain Ahab's chowder, but the March family's ginger snaps and apple turnovers. In 1993, the U.S. Post Office produced a 29-cent stamp featuring a scene from Little Women, and designer Giorgio Armani was offering a perfume called Joe, named for one of the March sisters. In 1994, a major film version of Little Women was released to notable acclaim, and the press found that women outnumbered male moviegoers an unprecedented 3-to-1. In 1995, an unpublished Alcott thriller, A Long Fatal Love Chase, appeared with considerable fanfare and a multi-million dollar deal. In October, it briefly appeared on the New York Times bestseller list. Stephen King, reviewing the thriller for the paper's book review, found the tale quite good, though ultimately not as good as Little Women. The year 1997 saw the publication of yet another previously unpublished manuscript, Alcott's first novel, The Inheritance, followed soon after by a made-for-TV movie. Certainly, Little Women has made its imprint on consumer culture as well. T-shirts and book bags, samplers and sachet dolls, not to mention puzzles, magnets, note cards, posters, diaries, and reproductions of Alcott's mood pillow are available in the Orchard House, which is the home of the Alcotts, in its gift shop. Alcott was at the time the only woman author profiled in the card game Authors, and she made a cameo appearance in the game Trivial Pursuit. In the 100th anniversary collection catalog for Madame Alexander, the Queen of American Doll Makers, the issue featured Meg March as one of the 9 dolls pictured. Meg, presumably because she was a girl who loved parties, her feminine party dress, trimmed with pearl, applique, and delicate ribbon roses, is perfect for the ball, read the copy. Hair bows of ribbon and pearl and taffeta slippers make her the perfect little woman. Little Women dolls were among the first that Madame Alexander created with the assistance of her 3 younger sisters. During her career, she presumably designed more than 125 sets of Little Women dolls. The 1949 dolls, together with some of the 1955 clothing, were even given new life as paper dolls. As Barbara Sickerman points out in her account of popular response to Little Women, middle-class girls ranging from M. Carey Thomas and Jane Addams to Simone de Beauvoir often found validation in Alcott's work of their ambitions for independence and achievement. So too did such writers as Gertrude Stein and Adrienne Rich. On the other hand, immigrants such as Elizabeth Stern and Mary Anton devoured the book to learn how to become more American. Or, as composer Charles Ives noted, Alcott leaves memory word pictures of healthy New England childhood days, pictures which are turned to with affection by middle-aged children, pictures that bear a sentiment, a leaven, that middle-aged America needs nowadays more than we care to admit. Clark continues, it may have been from an adult perspective that Alcott earned her 19th century sobriquet, the children's friend, and the word love, a emerges again and again in discussions of Louisa May Alcott. Children, especially girls, have simply loved her work. In 1888, Harriet Prescott Spofford could refer to Alcott as the writer better loved by the children of America than Shakespeare himself. By the 1930s, the adjective most commonly used seems to have been beloved. And when Alcott died in 1888, obituaries appeared in periodicals ranging from the British Athenaeum to the Ladies' Home Journal, from the Chautauquan to the Critic and to Cosmopolitan. A notice of Alcott's funeral appeared on the front page of the New York Times. Critically acclaimed author of speculative fiction Ursula Le Guin spoke about the personal impact of Little Women on her life. From the immediacy, the authority with which Frank Merrill's familiar illustrations of Little Women came to my mind as soon as I asked myself what a woman who is writing looks like. I know that Jo March must have had real influence upon me when I was a young scribbler. I am sure she has influenced many girls, whereas she is not like most real authors, either dead or inaccessibly famous. Nor, like so many artists in books, is she set apart by sensitivity or suffering or general superlativity. Nor is she, like most authors in novels, male. She is close as a sister and common as grass. We are about to hear another writer tell her story of the impact of the novel Little Women on her creative life. Sarah Elizabeth York will direct a distinctive stage adaptation of Little Women at the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble, an adaptation by another writer who was deeply touched by the story of Jo and her sisters. Playwright Heather Chrysler will pay a visit to Central Pennsylvania for special discussions before and after opening night on April 11th. And we had a chance to speak with Sarah by phone about her passion for this project. What has Little Women meant to you as young Sarah? Did you have an experience with the novel?
I sure did. It's funny that you ask that. I read Little Women in fourth grade. I bought it with my Christmas money, and I read it every single day at recess. I finished my work early every single day so I can read it, and basically spent weeks with the March sisters, and it became part of who I was, so much so that in fourth grade, it was the first time I wrote my own play. I was very inspired by Jo. So I had written my own play, and I had petitioned my elementary school to let me put it on at recess and invite all of the parents to come watch it. And so for me, reading Little Women, it was like being in the attic and in the home with the March sisters, and so much so that it inspired me to become an artist and start my artistry, which has been really, really fascinating to look back on, because that year and that book have specifically shaped who I am, not only as an artist, but as a woman.
Did the school allow you to put it on at recess?
They did. They did. We were not allowed to like have any plays. We only did the Christmas pageant and the Stations of the Cross, and that was all we were allowed to do. But I went through and had a petition signed, and I was able to put it on once at recess, and our parents came, and I bought juice and cookies and everything. So it was a really, really funny and like fun experience that I was able to live out a little bit of a dream.
Were you in it and directing it?
Oh, yeah. I wrote it, I directed it, and I starred in it. I was a real Jo March.
We have this background, and now we go into this conversation, which is going to be so much richer knowing that about you, Sarah.
And yeah.
Did you then go on to study theater? Did you go to study literature? How did you do your schoolwork after fourth grade?
Sure, that's a good question. So after fourth grade, I stayed pretty consistent with like wanting to write, and I loved writing and writing poetry, and I wanted to be a writer or an actor, and I always wanted to do something artistic like that. But where I grew up, there weren't a lot of artistic opportunities. So I was actually an athlete and played basketball and track and softball, and I was very busy and very active in the athletics world. But once I got to high school, a lot of high schools have one musical a year. And so that's what I did. I took part in one musical a year, and it was my way to feed my artistic side. And once I went away to college, I actually ended up secretly adding the theater major. I was not supposed to go to school for theater, and I secretly added the major without telling anyone in my family. And I became a theater major the end of my freshman first semester, and I began to study theater the following semester. So yeah, for me, it was something I always wanted to do, and I think that was very much influenced by the March sisters, and specifically by Jo herself. And I didn't really see it as a possibility or anything that was viable until I was out on my own and out of Google County, where there were more artistic opportunities in college. And I went to Virginia Tech. And so we had a really great burgeoning theater program, and it was really growing and booming at the time. And so I ended up adding the major secretly.
That's some story too.
How did you get connected with the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble?
So this is also a really funny story. The very first live theater I ever saw was at Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble. My mother worked in Bloomsburg and took us to see The House at Pooh Corner, which was, I believe, directed by Laurie McCants. And I got to see a lot of the original emeritus members of BTE, and it was my very first live theater experience. I was 6 years old, and it changed me. I loved theater since then, and then a few short years later, I was reading Little Women.
Many lovely circles there.
Yes.
Then it comes to the time that the pandemic arrives, and somehow you connected with the Little Women adaptation that Heather did. How did that all come to be?
So I had just finished my second year project for my MFA in directing at Ohio University, and we were all directing and moving online at the time, and we didn't know when we would be in person again or when we would be seeing traditional theater again. And so something that was going through my mind was, my friends aren't working right now, a lot of people aren't working right now, and no one is creating. And it felt like this just devastating time where we all needed to come together and have art more than ever. And so I was like, I'm going to self-produce something, and I'm going to self-produce online and learn how to direct online and master my craft online a little bit more, because this is something that has never been done before. And I wanted to build a skill. And so when I stopped and thought about what are some stories or plays that I might like to tell, I was thinking about plays that might feel topical, but also be an escape. And during COVID, obviously, we were inundated with illness, and we were inundated with a lot of grief and pain. And I was trying to find a story that could capture that, but also allow a sense of escapism and a sense of familiarity and nostalgia for people. And I happened to stumble upon Heather's adaptation on a list called the Kilroy's List, which is a list of plays by women and non-binary trans writers that is released every single year. And I found Heather's adaptation of Little Women, which struck me because it only had four actors in it. And trying to produce online and direct online, I wanted something that was small cast. And when I thought about Little Women, I was like, you know what? They deal with loss. They deal with grief. They lose their sister to scarlet fever, and they understand what the pain and the loss of the war is, and what it is to lose a family member. And that is what a lot of people were experiencing during the height of the pandemic and just the fear that was surrounding it. But something else that Little Women offers is a sense of warmth and nostalgia and memory and a form of escapism. So many people grew up with the March sisters, whether you read the book or you saw the 1994 adaptation or, the Katharine Hepburn film. There are so many avenues and access passages to the March family, and so many people are familiar with them. And I thought, what a better way to bring people together during such an uncertain time than with a family who gives you so much certainty. And so I reached out to Heather, and I asked her if she would be open to me producing it and directing it, because it hadn't had its premiere yet. And it was supposed to have its premiere that year, but with everything going online, it ended up being postponed. And so what we agreed to was that it would be considered a workshop and not the official premiere, but it was a workshop of the text where we were able to go through and talk about individual moments. And Heather sat in on a lot of our rehearsals and rewrote some of the script, and, really used our workshop as a way for her to fine tune and finalize the script. So it was really exciting to be, at the ground level of this play.
What did you learn about directing on Zoom that has now informed or hasn't informed the work you do that is with stage pieces?
That's a really, really great question. I think something that Zoom taught me is, you know, we all know theater is the ephemeral art. It happens. It's whoever is in the room experiences it, and nobody else gets to experience that production or that performance in the exact same way ever again. And with Zoom, what was really challenging is you weren't getting the audience's response. You weren't getting the audience's reaction. It was a screen, and you knew the audience was on the other side. You knew people were watching, but you had no idea what people thought. And that was one of the hardest things for me as a director, but also really taught me that it doesn't always matter what people think, that, you know, theater is the ephemeral art, and we're all experiencing it, whether we're in a room together or whether we were online. It encouraged me to be really proud of the art I was creating and be more resilient in the art I was creating and know that my art is not always going to capture or touch people in the same way, but it is going to touch someone. And I think Zoom gave me the permission to release the pressure off of myself to need to be perfect and to allow myself to take big risks and bold swings and really trust that what I'm doing and the intuitive nature of what I'm doing is going to land with an audience. And I don't need to put such a great pressure on once the audience is in the room, because I know and I'm certain that we've crafted and created a world that will resonate with people.
Well, then the next stage, the next question is then, from Zoom, how did you connect with BTE? Again, not little Sarah, but the mature artist director that you are now.
Well, I had actually reached out to BTE in and around the same time Little Women was happening. I had reached out about wanting to assist and direct on their summer show. And they were interested in bringing me in and having me assist Amy Renee Byrne, who is also in This Little Women. And Amy and I met. It was my spring break. We met. We were doing Lion, Witch, in the Wardrobe at the time. And we were talking about the world of the play. And it was agreed upon that I was going to come in and be an assistant director. But because of COVID, we couldn't actually have the production that summer. So it wasn't until I graduated from graduate school that I came in and I assisted Amy on Lion, Witch, in the Wardrobe, which a whole year later happened finally. Rather than happening in summer 2021, it happened in summer 2022. And I also was an administrative intern that summer working on accessibility and sensory-friendly stuff within the theater. And so I was an administrative intern, and I was also assistant directing on Lion, Witch, in the Wardrobe. So I was very immersed in the world of BTE that summer, both on the admin side and the artistic side.
Well, it made sense then for you, having had the experience you had with Heather's adaptation of the book, that you might want to do it not just on Zoom, but as a stage piece. How did you work to get that going? And you're bringing Heather in, which is exciting.
Yeah, so actually not this season, but last season, we had to replace one of our titles, and we were looking at different titles to bring in, and I had brought Little Women to BTE and said, hey, a friend of mine has written this really incredible four-person adaptation. I think it would be suited really well on our stage. I think our audiences would really like it. I think it would be something exciting and different, but still a classic story. And 2 years ago, when we were in play selection, and we were talking through pieces to fill in for this slot that had opened up, we were talking about The Hobbit, we were talking about Little Women, we were talking about Little Prince, and we ended up landing on The Little Prince, which I had also directed last year in the spring, which was another book I read in fourth grade, which is very funny, very formative time for me, apparently. But we had talked about Little Women, and we were just not sure that it was the right time or the right play at the time. And so this past year, we were in planning, and we were looking at different titles and titles written by people within our company and original pieces, and we were looking for something that was a smaller cast and something that would draw in an audience. And especially in the springtime, you know, the sun is finally coming out, the earth is blooming around you, and you want to feel a piece that is full of life. And I had recommended Little Women either for the winter because it is so Christmas adjacent, or for the spring because, you know, it's just bursting with life. And, you know, Play Selection had read it, and there was a lot of positive response to it, and we end up producing it in our 48th season.
How does Heather approach the adaptation? Because you mentioned already the 1930s version and Katharine Hepburn and Greta Gerwig and all the others, mm-hmm. film-wise, and musical. It's been a musical as well, hasn't it? How does she approach telling the story on stage?
Heather approaches it in such an innovative, scrappy way. And I always talk about it's so innovative. It really, really is. And it's scrappy. So it's four actors play the four sisters, and three of the four actors play the men. So they also play Laurie, John Brooke, and Bear. And so that is already an unorthodox way to do Little Women. Usually you have Marmee and Hannah and Laurie and all of these people. And she really hones in and focuses on the relationships of the four sisters and the core moments within the play that develop each of the girls and their relationships with each other or the relationships to the people around them. And she's so thoughtful and so caring with the script because she loves and values Louise May Alcott incredibly deeply and loves this book immensely. And she has crafted it in a way that Amy's paintings, when Amy is painting in France, she is not just painting, she's blowing up balloons. So there's this childlike wonder when Meg, which, you know, we don't often see any adaptation include Meg in her homemaking or Meg in, you know, her own world. We see Meg often with the sisters, but this adaptation does what we call the jelly meltdown when Meg is trying to make jams and preserves for her husband and, you know, is not doing it as perfectly as she hoped. And so she's not the perfect housewife immediately. And she has this, what we call the jelly meltdown. And instead of having her spin stir pots, she's using giant hula hoops and trying to keep the hula hoops in the air and on her arm as she's doing this monologue. And so the hula hoops, the balloons, there's these elements of childlike wonder, and they are used so thoughtfully and in such an innovative way to bring the world to life. So it feels like items that are being pulled out of a childhood bedroom or out of a child treasure trove become the items within the world of the Marches. And Heather does it in such a flawless and really just captivating way that I think audiences are bound to love.
And you resonate with them more than just if you picked up the script yourself one day and read it, but you go back to being in fourth grade and being captivated by this, living this book, living the characters and being Joe yourself. So this would be something that would really speak to you as not just a director, but as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the beautiful thing about the March Sisters and Little Women is that we can see and find ourselves in the book. Like, I am a Joe at heart. I'm a Joe through and through, but I have elements of Amy. I have elements of Meg. I have elements of Beth. And I think I've been each of them at different points of my life. And what I love about Heather's script is I think she hones in on Joe's artistic journey and how Joe becomes a writer and how Joe becomes who she is. But I also think that she hones in on each of the sisters and the qualities that make them really spectacular and the qualities that make them so unique. And I think a lot of other adaptations don't quite capture the sisters' individuality the same way that Heather does.
And the idea of weaving these stories together and reflecting on the relationship between and among the sisters and then the loss of Beth and how that impacts everybody and pushes Joe ahead. That's what you were noticing when you were thinking about it as a COVID play. Does it have a different resonance now, do you think, as you direct the loss of Beth on the stage?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really great question. And it's something that I've actually been sitting with a lot because COVID and the pandemic is now 5-6 years ago, and it feels so far away, but it's also still so familiar for so many people. And so in capturing the death of Beth, it became more of capturing loss and grief in general and capturing what we as people have experienced in our own lives. And right now the world is so uncertain, and every single day I, you know, turn on the news or open my phone and I'm not sure what I'm going to be met with. And I think that that uncertainty can feel harrowing and it really can be scary. And I think there's such an uncertainty in Beth's death, but there's also this beauty where the sisters come together and how they mourn her is through celebrating her. And something that I keep talking about in directing the piece this time is when I directed it last time, it was supposed to be a mirror to life and supposed to reflect as a mirror of what was happening around us. And this time around, it feels like more of an escape. It's more of giving people permission to escape into the world and experience the love, experience the loss, experience the grief at their own pace, and a way for them to, you know, step into the theater and out of the real world for a moment and just breathe and be present. And I think that Beth's death, even though it is tragic and it is deeply moving, and we actually had a rehearsal today where it was really, really very moving today, even more so than usual. And I was able to escape into it and really allow myself to feel what I was feeling without feeling like I had to be restrictive of my emotions. And I think it just gives people permission to feel at their own pace.
What about the question of when the novel was written and the whole issue of women in the 19th century at Civil War time and domesticity and having a sense of independence? Is it something that you find yourself updating, or does Louisa May Alcott's creating of the characters allow you to let these people be, as you say, their magnificent selves, and we can experience their individuality and the strictures within which they are living and growing?
Yeah, the world is so fascinating because what Louisa has crafted was obviously based very much on her own life and her own experiences with her sisters and her mother and her father. And so what she has written holds up remarkably in that, like, there are still strictures and expectations put on women to get married, to have children, to do these things. And I think Jo being, you know, she even talks about, oh, every family should have an old maid. Like, I'm the old maid. I'm going to be essentially a spinster. Like, she kind of views herself like that. And even in 2026, you know, when women choose to be independent and on their own, there is still a judgment passed, or there's still an expectation of what women need to be doing or how they need to be living. And what I think is so fascinating is that, you know, a book written about women in 1861 still echoes true to how women exist and live and function in 2026. And Louisa, you know, the way she wrote this book was to honor her family and to make money. It wasn't something that she was immediately passionate about writing about. She was writing more of the fantastical stories the same way Jo was. And so she did this to make money and to be a breadwinner and take care of her family because her father wasn't making that money and didn't believe in that and the worldly possessions or accepting money for goods or services that you provide. And I think what Louisa has crafted for each woman in this play is that they are their own individual self, even though the world might, you know, influence them or have certain expectations of them. She still allows them to shine and still allows them to be unique. And I don't actually think Heather has had to do an immense amount of updating or adapting to make that relevant, because it still feels relevant today. And as a woman in my, you know, in my mid-30s, I feel it. And, you know, I can relate to these girls and in the book and the expectations that are put on them and the expectations that are put on me. And I just think that that will resonate with women in the audiences, and especially young girls.
BTE is so fortunate to be able to draw on a production team, whether it be set, whether it be sound design, whether it be costuming, lighting, those sorts of things, always to enhance whatever it is that they're presenting. How are you finding, and what are you able to draw on to give us that environment in which these women live?
Yeah, so in the script, Heather has written that this takes place in the attic in the March home. And, you know, she says it can be an attic in Orchard House, it can be an attic in your own home, it could be whatever it is, it's an attic. And even when I came back to directing it a second time, Heather texted me and said, "Welcome back to the attic." And so something that I really wanted to capture in the scenic design was this presence of the attic and this lived-in space that even when, in the script it says, even when it's cold, it's warm. I wanted it to feel lived in. I wanted it to feel alive. I wanted it to feel like the girls were the architects of their own space. And so we've really crafted this attic that feels like it has been made with love and handcrafted by each of the girls. And Kate Campbell, who is our scenic designer, has done a really excellent job in abstracting the attic so it feels like this really cool, exciting space, but making it feel homey and lived in and really cared for. And it's just been really exciting to see that come to life and in such a cool, abstract way.
And the word that we use for this, it's a play, but you were indicating about the hula hoops and the balloons.
Oh, yeah.
So playfulness and wonder play is part of the concept, is it? Your concept?
Yeah, it's very much, as I said, I consider the girls architects of their own world. And so I imagine it is like they are in their attic and they are pulling items out of trunks. They're pulling items out of, you know, off of costume racks. They're pulling items from their space, whatever they can find, whatever found object they have, and they're creating with that found object. So it feels like the imagination of being a childhood in a bedroom and playing dress up or, you know, playing heroes with somebody. I wanted it to feel like everything came from the girls and was such an organic, authentic experience, because I think we've all experienced that as children and in our childhood, is the power of imagination and the power of play.
What about music? Do you use any incidental music within the production or to get us in and out?
Yeah, we have a sound designer. Sid McCarty is our sound designer, and we are playing with a music box motif, so still something very nostalgic, something very childlike, also like diegetic sound and ambiance. So there's moments where, you know, we're outside and we feel like we're outside in the cold winter air, and then the next moment we're inside the attic and you can hear the creaks of the floor and things like that. So there's a lot of ambiance and sound that will be shaping out the world as well.
Now, Heather is coming in, so tell us about that visit and how we might be able to see her.
Yeah, Heather is coming in and is actually going to be here for our opening night, and we will be having an opening night talkback after the show on April 11th, which is very exciting. She and the cast and myself will be answering questions about the play, about the world, about our particular production, which is really exciting. But earlier that day, we have an event at Campus Theater in Lewisburg, which is a panel on adaptations, and Emma Ganader, who is our communications director, has put together this really incredible event where we're going to be talking about what it's like to adapt a play, what it's like to work on an adaptation, and then they will be showing the 1994 version of Little Women, which is my favorite, with Winona Ryder, and I know it's Heather's favorite too. So Heather is going to be here and, you know, part of that panel, and then later on part of a talk back after our opening night performance.
Sarah Elizabeth York, theater director, producer, actor, and educator, a native of Schuylkill County, Pennsylvania, and creative producer at the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble. Sarah spoke with us about the upcoming production of Little Women, adapted by Heather Chrysler from Louisa May Alcott's novel, and it's a production Sarah directs. The show runs from April 9th through the 26th, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m., and Sundays at 3. There will be a low-price preview on Thursday, April 9th at 7:30, with a regular preview also at 7:30 on Friday, the 10th. The formal opening will take place on Saturday, April 11th at 7:30, and that will be followed by a talk back with playwright Heather Chrysler on hand. Earlier on the 11th, at the Campus Theater in Lewisburg, at 1 o'clock, there will be a special program titled On Stage and Screen, centering on the practices of adaptation, as we just heard Sarah describe. Heather Chrysler will be a featured guest on the panel. Director Sarah Elizabeth York and cast members will take part, and there will be professors from Bucknell University. The event includes a screening of the 1994 film version of Little Women with Winona Ryder. That's Little Women,
adapted from the Louisa May Alcott novel by Heather Chrysler, directed by Sarah Elizabeth York, at the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble, the Alvina Krauss Theater, 226 Center Street in Bloomsburg, April 9th through the 26th, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 3. A low price preview April 9th at 7:30 and a regular preview April 10th at 7:30 as well. And on the formal opening day, Saturday, April 11th, there will be the performance at 7:30 with a talk back to follow that will include playwright Heather Chrysler, the director Sarah Elizabeth York, actors as well. And earlier in the day at 1 o'clock at the Campus Theater in Lewisburg, there will be a program titled On Stage and Screen, centering on the practice of adaptation and what that means, how you take a book, for example, and bring it to life on stage or screen. And Heather Chrysler, the playwright here, will be a featured guest. The director, Sarah, we spoke to on Art Scene, cast members and professors from Bucknell, and a screening of the 1994 film version of Little Women. For more information on everything, bte.org, bte.org. That's the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble, 226 Center Street in Bloomsburg. And it is Little Women, April 9th through the 26th, and the formal opening on the 11th, bte.org.